This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Yo, welcome to a Monday edition of the Orange Bloods podcast. I am Jeff Ketchum, owner, publisher, column writer. I do things. I anger people over at orangebloods.com. Thanks to our friends over at Texas Card House for being the sponsor of this show and for being a tremendous partner over at orangebloods.com and here at the Yak. We will always remember them as being one of our first partners in this growing enterprise. Go check them out, 183 and Anderson Mill. Go inside. It is the premier poker club of inside the state of Texas. It is a sports bar. But it's not a sports bar. It's wrong. It is a poker room. It is a card room. There are cash games and card games of tournament types. I'm not doing a very good job. The bottom line is go inside. They've been catering a lot lately. I mentioned the whole sports bar vibe thing. I say that because there are big screen TVs everywhere. So I have found myself peeking at TV at times while getting my poker on when I'm over at the Texas Card House. Anyway, go check them out. The guys are Orange Bloods members. It is an Orange Blood supported business, and they have a phenomenal product. I mean, if you got the itch to go to Vegas, just go down the street, down to the Texas Card House. They will take care of you. So this weekend, no NFL football, no college football. We don't count the Pro Bowl, although it was... I watched about 5 minutes of the Pro Bowl. It included Jason Garrett challenging a play in the Pro Bowl that he wasn't legally able to challenge, at which point I was like, to hell with this. I thought it made for decent background material while I did my writing for 10 Thoughts from the Weekend. In the end, no, not so much. Nope. A man can only take so much Jason Garrett ineptitude. It made me want to embrace the offseason. Can we get to less football on TV if it means that I don't have to watch the clapper? I don't have to watch Jason Garrett. The Cowboys wear my ass out, man. So I got a little taste of the Cowboys and Jason Garrett at a Pro Bowl. I switched off. I decided I really need to see Roma. It's on Netflix. It's been waiting for me to watch. So yesterday I sat down in my office. I grabbed a television out of a neighboring bedroom. I put it down. It's still sitting here right in front of me. I don't know. It's like a... I don't know how big this TV is, but, you know, it's like a... It's a decent-sized TV sitting on my desk. I watched Roma. It was a delightful little film. If you really and truly want to know the best part of my Sunday, outside of the times my kids made me laugh, I thought Roma was just an absolutely delightful movie. I would recommend it. I found it quite touching. I thought the acting was superb. I thought the directing was superb. I thought... there were little nuances to what this movie did. One of them was using natural sounds. Nat sounds like a TV thing, but it is the background noise. And there were times in this movie where it was noisy in the background and you didn't know what the hell was the noise and why is it there. And you think it's an accent piece for the scene without realizing that it's going to turn into something very literal. Almost always bizarre, but, you know, the movie is set, I think, 1971 Mexico. It was really good. It was really good. It was one of the best movies that I've seen. It was easy for me to see why that movie was nominated for an Oscar. And I have not felt that way about 4 of the 6 Oscar movies. Maybe I'll get into that before this podcast is over. Surely I have an Academy Awards rant inside of me, but I thought Roma was very good. It was very much hyped. I think 20 minutes into it, I was wondering, is this thing not as good as it's hyped? And I would say within the next 10, 15, 20 minutes, the movie really grabbed a hold of me. And it was really good. Really, really good. So, aside from my Roma breakdown from the weekend that was and my Jason Garrett dismay, you know, this is going to be, this will go down, at least in this town. We will remember this weekend in January of 2019 as the Brew McCoy weekend. And I think that there's probably been, you know, if you have a friend, maybe he's not a Longhorn on orangebloods.com or someone who's such an avid information seeker of the Longhorns that they would listen to this podcast on the Yak. Maybe you have a friend that's not that into it. And they hear something like Longhorns pick up a, forget about the context of how all of this happened. Just the Longhorns picked up a 5-star wide receiver. And, you know, if you've got one of those friends that's like, oh, big deal. The Longhorns always get good recruits. You know, they had good recruits in 2010, 2011, named basically every year up the last decade or so up until this year. Teams have never been great, so you'll forgive me if I roll my eyes at the idea that the Longhorns got a 5-star receiver. Big whoop. Tell me something I don't already know without knowing. It's funny. One of the reasons why this is a really big deal is that, no, actually, the Longhorns have had a lot of things, certainly in recruiting over the last 20, 25 years in recruiting. You know, they've had national players of the year and number one overall ranked players. They've had quarterbacks and they've had running backs. They've had all kinds of things. But in the history of the Rivals.com rankings, at least as far back as 2002. Now, look, I go back to 1999 with Rivals.com. I will mention the era of Rivals that's kind of the bastard Jon Snow of the Rivals.com archives of all time. But Rivals went bankrupt back in 2001, and then it relaunched itself. And this new relaunch version of Rivals, its first recruiting class was 2002. Now, while Rivals has been sold a couple of times since its reformation in 2002, it never went bankrupt again, which means like the site didn't just die. There are no archives of Rivals.com pre-2002. So when I talk about the modern era of Rivals.com, I don't include these like bastard years where I worked there and I've got stories and I personally have rankings and there were rankings that existed, but there are no archives of these rankings. So, you know, I feel like I'm one of the only people that walk around citing rankings that are nowhere else anywhere to be found. So in this modern era, 2002 through, you know, 2019, the Longhorns have only one time in almost two decades have they landed a 5-star wide receiver prospect. And that was back in 2002. His name was Marquise Johnson, and he never actually made it to campus because the NCAA red flagged his passing score and made him retake the ACT. He did not get the score that he needed after having achieved the score beforehand. That it caused him to academically not qualify. Couple that with the fact that he injured, I believe, his ACL in a car accident, the details of which were very kind of, the rumors were always kind of sketchy of what happened there. There was a story, and as someone used to talk to Marquise Johnson all the time when he was back in as a high school prospect back then, I don't even know that I ever fully got the full details. You just would hear rumors from coaches and things like that. But he never made it to campus. So that was a long way of saying that Marquise Johnson is, up until Friday, the only 5-star prospect that's a wide receiver that the Texas football program has ever landed, except he never showed up. So, you know, if a bear shits in the woods kind of a thing, Marquise Johnson signed with Texas. He never made it to campus. So in the history of the Rivals.com rankings, the Texas Longhorns have never had a five-star wide receiver prospect. Enter Brew McCoy. The number 12 rated prospect in the country in the Rivals.com rankings. He is officially, in the history of this modern era of Rivals ranking, the highest rated wide receiver prospect in the history of the Texas football program. That's a big deal. That's a big deal. And when people, so what does that mean? You know, because one of the things that I always want with any commitment, and sometimes I don't think fans want to hear it because a four-star kid commits and you're like, well, there's still an 80% chance that he won't succeed. It kind of turns recruiting into a bummer at times. Like, can't you let me enjoy my national top 250 prospect without reminding me that he's about four times as likely to not succeed as whomever that's ranked as a five-star? No, I get it, man. I get it. I can be that guy. But in this instance, you want me to be that guy because you want me to tell you what Brew McCoy's commitment means. And in the context of basically the last 15 years of prospects and how they evolve into NFL football players, there is about, oh, I wish I'd pulled up the data before I started doing this podcast. A five-star prospect is anywhere between, let's say, 58% to 75% likely. There's a 58 to 75% chance of that guy emerging into an NFL drafted prospect. And when you consider the number of things that can sidetrack a guy, this is always one of my favorite speeches to give. You've probably heard me say this in a podcast many times. Because I constantly feel like this needs to be pointed out. There is a 58 to 75% chance, depending on any given year, the number usually nestles somewhere in the 60s. But in an extreme year, it could be 75, and its lowest year, just under 60%. Let's just ballpark it. 65%. Basically, two out of every three five-star guys drafted as an NFL football player. And that takes place when you consider that grades can sidetrack a guy and injuries can sidetrack a guy and being in the wrong system can sidetrack a guy or bad luck or girls or homesickness or getting arrested or drugs or there's so many things that could be the or you were in Japan and you shoplifted. Like there are these things that happen. All these things can happen to men who are between the ages of 18 and 23 usually. And all those things are possible with every single guy. And yet five-star guys, two out of three, end up being NFL drafted prospects. And while that's a very vague thing to some degree, because there are seven rounds, seventh round draft pick's not the same as a first round draft pick. The most extreme part of the differences between the likelihood of a five-star guy being a first round draft pick and the chances of a, let's say, two-star prospect being a first-round draft pick, there's about a 33% likelihood, this is based on averages over, again, about 15 years, every first-round draft pick has about a 33% likelihood of eventually being a first-round. A two-star pick has a 98% chance of not being a first-round draft pick. It's a rather sizable slice of the pie versus a crumb, a mere crumb, such a small piece of crumb from this pie that you're not even quite sure, is that a piece of that pie? Or is that just something else? Meanwhile, the likelihood of Brew McCoy being a first round draft pick in 3 or 4 years, it's a third of the pie. It's a third of the pie. So it matters. I wrote in my column that I thought Brew McCoy was the number one rated prospect at the wide receiver position that Texas has ever landed. In the modern of the Rivals era, as I've explained, that's true. If we want to take it back further, we want to say all time, the conversation turns into, is Brew McCoy slightly higher rated than B.J. Johnson, who was in that bastard class of 2000 for Rivals.com, where I remember where guys were ranked. B.J. Johnson was the number two wide receiver in the country, the number one rated player in Texas, and he was a five-star guy by Rivals.com. Do you know how I know that? Because that year, Rivals took its top 22 players, B.J. Johnson included in that group. He was the number two wide receiver in the country, and we took those dudes to Maui, except B.J. Johnson didn't go to Maui with us. Charles Rogers, future first-round draft pick, he was the number one ranked wide receiver that year. He did go to Maui with me, and in a span of about 72 hours, that dude provided me with about 47 different stories. One of them includes allegedly putting a future Hall of Fame college football coach on the phone with him so that he could persuade another five-star recruit to pick that school, despite the fact that that kid had never visited that school. And all in the name of, have you heard what I'm getting? You could probably get the same thing. Here, talk to coach. Charles Rogers, infinitely interesting dude, whose NFL career turned out to be infinitely interesting as well. And not in a whole lot of good ways either. But B.J. Johnson was the number two wide receiver in the class in the country back in 2000. If Brew McCoy isn't the number one wide receiver in the history of Texas football recruiting, it's B.J. Johnson, I guess. Although, honestly, the two guys are neck and neck. There's just no recorded history of B.J. Johnson and his rankings outside of my spot in my archived Lone Star recruiting rankings in the year of 2000. The only person in the industry of any significance or stature whatsoever who's had the balls for over 20 years to keep his rankings up. Nobody else does that. Just throwing that out there. That I'm still that. I'm the only guy. Ask me for 1997. I'll give you a link today. I've got them all. I have worked diligently to make sure that you never lose my ranking. Which I think makes me the number one authority on this. I think my vote matters most. I'm the only one that has the rankings. And that includes Montrell Flowers. Regardless, this is the big deal. And if you include in the last 20 years or so, if you include that class of 2000, the Longhorns have had two five-star receivers on campus, B.J. Johnson and Roy Williams. Roy Williams was a first-round draft pick. And it's either him or Jordan Shipley as the number one spot in pretty much every single statistical wide receiver record that could be owned. That's what getting a five-star receiver sometimes means. He shows up and kicks the shit out of the record book. The other guy, B.J. Johnson, you know, it's easy, I think, to, you know, B.J. didn't have Roy's career. And yet, it's been 15 years, 15 seasons have gone by since B.J. Johnson played his last collegiate football game, and he's still seventh in school history in receiving. So the last 15 seasons have occurred, and the Shipleys have showed up, and, you know, hey, Lil Jordan Humphreys have showed up, and Colin Johnson's have showed up. All these guys have showed up. Lima Swede. I mean, you know, Quan Cosby, Mike Davis, all these guys have showed up. And B.J. Johnson's still the number seven player all time at the University of Texas in receiving. So barring the things that I just talked about, if Brew McCoy can avoid drugs, if Brew McCoy can avoid injuries, if Brew McCoy can avoid homesickness, if Brew McCoy can avoid the plague, like if he can avoid these things, he's almost certainly going to be one of the best players at the wide receiver position that the University of Texas has ever had. I mentioned Marquise Johnson back in 2002. What? 33% light chance of being a first-round draft pick. 65-70% chance of eventually being drafted. He wasn't. What happened? Didn't qualify. Got hurt. Among other things, Montrell Flowers, even if we bring him up, you know, because Montrell Flowers was the number one wide receiver He was the number one player in the state of Texas back in 1998. I can't exactly remember where the national recruiting advisor under Bobby Burton. I don't exactly know where they slotted Montrell Flowers on the. He might have been the number one receiver in the country. At which point, if we really wanted to go old school, we would say Brew McCoy is the best wide receiver recruit for the University of Texas, only behind Montrell Flowers in 1998. Now, people forget that Montrell Flowers showed up, and while he was having a disappointing season, because ultimately Montrell Flowers did not play in the NFL. But if you ask yourself, why didn't Montrell Flowers play in the NFL? Because he gave up like a body part in a game. You know, Montrell Flowers in his junior season, which would have been the year that Roy Williams and that group showed up, he was the team's leading. I think he had 3 touchdown passes in the first couple of games of his junior season, and he took a shot in a football game, and then he gave up a body part, and I can't remember which one, but it was an organ of some sort, or he didn't have an organ. I can't remember exactly what it was that caused Montrell Flowers to retire from football. But Montrell Flowers probably turns into a draftable NFL football player and plays on Sundays. But one of the one of those issues that can strike any player in college football at any time, including that all those 2 stars, 33% of the time ish, they take out a 5 star. But when they don't, those players typically there are rare exceptions. There are 5-star busts that go places and they bust out the next big thing. And they just forget about injuries. Sometimes they're just not good. I mean, that's possible. But that thing, that factors into that 33%. That's part of it. Sometimes they get arrested. Sometimes they do drugs. Sometimes they do this. Sometimes this happens. Sometimes they're not good. That's also part of that 33%. There's a 2 in 3 chance that Brew McCoy, is going to be a top 10 wide receiver in the history of the program. So that makes it a big deal. From a recruiting saga standpoint, talking about just Brew McCoy. You know, a week ago, I didn't have him in my top 10. And that's no slight on Brew McCoy's saga before this past weekend, before he put his name in the transfer portal days after enrolling at USC, only to get a waiver from USC as he's, you know, gone through. Like, that didn't exist a couple of weeks ago. A couple of weeks ago, I did my top 10 list of all-time OrangeBloods.com recruiting sagas, and he wasn't in the top 10. But everything that happened in the last week moves him into the number 3 spot. He gets a medal stand position. I think it's gold medal Ryan Perilou, silver medal Daryl Scott, and I think to its credit, because I wondered in this post-social media world if a recruiting story could still have the dynamics in place that would allow it to move to a top 3 position that these other stories that were kind of pre-social media, if, you know, I've wondered if it was even possible. And Brew McCoy did it. Top 3, baby! Oh, and then it's a crowded top 10. You know, it was interesting. I changed the order up, not just with McCoy when I was doing the list for my column this weekend. You know, I thought, and I want to say R. Long, who I'm debating in my 10 thoughts from the weekend comment section today over some incredibly trivial stuff. That's every bit as trivial as the shit we typically argue about trivially on a Monday. But I thought he made a really good case for Lake Seastrunk and him having a higher position. So in a redo, I think if Brew McCoy hadn't happened, I think I might have needed to put Lake Seastrunk's recruitment in the top 3. Because when you really stop and think about what the Lake Seastrunk, the Willie Lyles thing and the mom and all of that. It just, there was a lot to it. There really was. No, don't make me go down that rabbit hole. I'm going to pardon myself from that piece of the conversation and circle back to Brew McCoy, which, you know, if you're a Texas Longhorn football fan today, of the 10 highest recruited receivers in the history of the school, five of them are going to be on campus this season. Because you've got three from this season. You know, I think Brew McCoy is going to overshadow Jordan Whittington and is going to overshadow Jake Smith. And to be fair, both of those guys are listed as athletes, as is Brew McCoy. You know, I'm projecting this based on the positions they're expected to play. Whittington, probably more of a jack of all trades guy. He may be the rare Eric Metcalf type talent that it's hard to pigeonhole him into a position. Or in 2 years from now, he could just be playing wide receiver. We'll see. It happened to Lil Jordan. We all thought Lil Jordan would be that guy. Oh, he could take 10 snaps at running back and play wide. And then Texas just played him at wide receiver. And he's going to go to the NFL. He's going to be a wide receiver. And it's likely what's going to happen with Brew McCoy. Again, who's only the highest rated player projected to play receiver for the Longhorns. Let me say it again, the modern era of Rivals.com. Which is essentially the modern era of high school football recruiting. It's a big deal. But Jake Smith is on campus, and Jordan Whittington is on campus. And don't forget, Devin Duvernay was really, really highly recruited. And you look back from a year ago, Brennan Eagles, again, super highly recruited. Like, this isn't even including Colin Johnson. This is a sick collection of wide receiver talent. You know, there are guys like John Burt, who was a national top 100 guy. There's a number of guys like that. Avante Woodard. Like, there's a stack of guys who were national top 100 guys. Texas seems to collect high four-star wide receivers like nothing else. It's that extra echelon of elite-level recruits that they haven't been getting their hands on in such frequency, and yet in the 10 times, I think that it's the 10 most highly recruited guys in the history of the program, five on campus this year. Four on campus for each of the next two seasons, barring transfers or whatever. So the real strength of this Texas football program right now is it has a potential Heisman candidate at quarterback, and it has the deepest set of wide receiver talent that has ever been available in the history of the school. And that these are proven players coming back, in addition to all the big-time guys that are showing up right now. So, while Lil Jordan Humphrey is an obscene loss for this football team, and you'd much rather have him coming back than have him, you know, going to the NFL, if you're a Texas football fan, I mean, a bright side is it's loaded back there. It's loaded. And it is not inconceivable that the player that emerges from this group isn't better than Lil Jordan Humphrey. That could happen. Brew McCoy could show up and be that guy, that good, that soon. Because that five-star credential usually indicates that there's a really good chance that that's who he's going to be. You know, again, all I've got to do is point out, if you take Marquise Johnson out of the equation and you include all, if you include Rivals.com rankings and National Recruiting Advisor rankings, the only three five-star receivers that Texas has ever landed, Roy Williams, B.J. Johnson, Montrell Flowers. One was injured. One was injured and still had a really good career, and the other one was a first-round draft pick. And probably the best NFL player that the school has produced at that position in, I don't know, I'd have to stop and think about it. Is Roy Williams the greatest NFL wide receiver that the school has ever produced? Probably. Probably. So, five stars matter. Brew McCoy matters. Moving on, because I've done a healthy, just like my column, I've done a healthy amount of Brew McCoy conversation today. When we look at the Texas basketball program, I do feel like I need to take a couple of minutes to talk about this. I wrote a column just a couple of weeks ago where I said, look, by any means necessary, you can just see it's not happening with Shaka. You can see it. You don't have to go to the Irwin Center, man. You can see it from afar. It's just not working. Now, I'm not one of these dudes that's... Look, there's a lot of things about what's happened with the Texas basketball program over the last four seasons that I think Shaka Smart has to be accountable for, and I don't think he's produced enough in certain areas. I question some of his player development right now. I question player development through the offseason. I question player development during this season. But I personally, this is just me, I still think Shaka Smart is a damn good coach. I still think that this is a guy that in different circumstances is going to do a better job. Just like I thought that about Rick Barnes at the end. These are different situations, but at the end, Rick Barnes needed a fresh start. He needed a new challenge. It had gotten stale. And just because it had gotten stale and the end wasn't as good as the beginning, Rick Barnes was still a damn good coach. You can have a bad year. You can have bad years. You can fail at a job and still be damn good at what you do. Failure's part of life. Tom Brady is the GOAT, right? There's a chance this weekend that he could lose his fourth Super Bowl. Now, he's won five. So he's won more than anybody. If he loses, and I'm taking the Patriots, by the way, but if he loses, he matches Fran Tarkenton and Jim Kelly for Super Bowl losses. If he wins, he's got six, and he's lapping the field. But those things aren't, the rack of wins and the slew of losses when you've been in a Super Bowl as many times as he's been, and you're not perfect, you're not Jordan, you're not 6-0. Failure is part of it. I say all of that while also saying, I think, like with Rick Barnes, I think it would probably behoove Shaka Smart, if all things were being equal, to go get a fresh start somewhere else. It's just not happening here. It's not. But they lost the last two games of the season to TCU. They lose to Georgia. And one of the worst defensive displays. It was one of those scenes that made you wonder, has he lost his messaging to his team? Has Shaka Smart lost his team? Are they still dialed in? They really needed to win that game, and they played like shit. Defensive effort was poo-poo. Yet, when that game ended, I wondered to myself, is he done? Is he dead? Are they really going to make a change? Because the elephant in the room with regards to his situation is that he's got, I think, 13-ish million still left on his deal. And, Texas fans want to say things like, well, you're either the Joneses or you're not. This is where you prove where you're the Joneses. And, we make it. And some fans, well, look at how many people won't show up, and they'll lose this and they'll lose that. And look, man, first of all, you're arguing with the moon at this point, because I'm not debating you about all the stuff you want to talk about. I'm not debating you that less fans will show up. I'm not debating you that the enthusiasm for the program will be lackluster. Nobody's debating you. However, I live in a world of reality, man. And I'm not trying to be condescending. I'm keeping it real. We live in a world when Charlie Strong, which is the football is the only thing Texas really cares about. 13 million, 15 million left on his deal after year two was a non-starter. And when it got down to 10, it was still a big deal. And it's football. Because let me tell you the way decision makers look at this thing. Let me tell you how an average Board of Regent member who votes on these things, that approves budgets, who has to answer to, I don't know, people, to themselves, trying to figure out who like Wallace Hall has answered to for the last few years. Every Board of Regent member has a different ideology, and every administrator has a different thing. But the one thing they all agree on? They do not want to be in the business of eating $13 million on basketball. They don't want to do it on football. I can tell you that Texas administrators, they were they were very hesitant before the Kansas game. You know, history, I think, will always show that that Kansas loss had to happen to force the change. Because they were looking at this thing and they were like, look, there's $10 million of dead money. That doesn't include the other dead money, coordinators and this and that. It doesn't include the money that it will take to hire a new guy. You're paying him $5 million a year. Suddenly you're looking at like 30-something million dollars on salaries for football coaches for the next 4 years. Like, that freaks them out. Freaks them out. So you can say all that stuff about, nobody's going to show up and, you know, it's a short-sighted. I'm not arguing with you. What I'm telling you is that there's a backdrop and there's a conversation about all of this that goes beyond the question of, is Shaka Smart the best coach right now that Texas can get? It doesn't just come down to that. And you shouldn't live in a pretend world where from year to year, the university would think of making a major decision based off of the whims it thinks it has from year to year. So, because 3 years ago, they gave Shaka an extension after one season. Why? Because they made a decision based off of a whim after a single year. Now, I'm not trying to insult anybody and tell you that water ain't wet and that he hasn't had multiple cases. None of the years have been great, even if there was one year where it looked like he did a really good job. And you could even make the case that a year ago he did a solid job in getting that team to the NCAA tournament. It was at least a decent job. Whereas 2 years ago, it was poor. Whew, this one's looking poor, too. But the bottom line is that there's just other things to consider that people who make decisions take into consideration. And I talked to somebody this weekend, and I talked to a number of sources, but I'm not even going to pretend that a couple of my sources who were just school administrators were as significant of a source as my primary source on this. And this source doesn't steer me wrong. Never has. Never has. So this weekend, I ran it by the source on a scale of 1 to 10. Like, how much trouble is Shaka in right now? And the message that he hit me back with was, I think he's safe for one more season. And then we talked about it a little bit, exchanged some messages back and forth. We both found common ground on what we thought in a world where everything's equal, we both kind of agreed. Like, look, it ain't working out for Shaka. It probably won't work out for Shaka. However, we don't work in a world, we don't exist in a world where all things are equal. And in this unequal world that we live in, as it stands right now, the common thinking is that Shaka probably is going to get another year. Now, could that change? Could the Longhorns lose out? Could the bottom truly fall out? Could something still happen in the next 6 weeks that changes that? Sure, sure. Because you're an idiot if you're talking in absolutes at the moment. So I'm not going to dare talk in absolutes one way when I would tell anybody else, dude, don't talk in absolutes the other way. I've had a couple of people on Orange Bloods today try to pin me down and say, if things change, you know, don't you come back here with this, well, it was nuanced and layered. It is nuanced and layered. It is. You know, Shaka's 5-game winning streak away from being without certainty, like, you know, back in for another season. He could lose 5 in a row, and suddenly, instead of, a game or two over 500, 3 games under 500, and, like, maybe, like, it's still fluid. It is. I wish I could give you an absolute and be the first one to tell you. But that's just not my sense of it. And I think the good news is this. Ultimately, Chris Del Conte will make the decision. This is his rodeo. And that has not been the case in the last decade or so of coaching dismissals, coaching decisions. A whole lot of hands in the pot, whole lot of hands involved in the kitchen, and that's not the case now. Chris Del Conte will make the decision, But Chris Del Conte also has a bunch of projects that he's working on. Chris Del Conte is already underneath the weight of a fundraising goal that the University of Texas Athletic Department has never seen before. It already has things that it wants to build. It already needs money for things that it is building. Things it wants to build, things it plans to build, things it already is building. And they're having to ask from their key donors for a lot. And it's fair to ask whether or not, look, what the more financially cautious decision would be, don't eat the money. If you don't have to, give Shaco another year. He's got a 5-star big coming in. Coleman will be a junior. I mean, you know, you can talk yourself into things will be okay. Things conceivably could be better. They could be sweet 16. I mean, you can talk yourself into it. You can talk yourself into anything. But as things currently stand, nothing is so emphatic that I would tell you to be absolute and with your convictions about what you think is going to happen. Because I don't sense, you know, mirror, mirror on the wall. What the hell's going on beyond the wall? Can't tell. Murky. I think that's what the mirror would say. Murky? But Shocker probably coming back. But probably isn't the same as definitely. And you only say definitely when there's something absolute, and we ain't in an absolute moment. And with that being said, there's some doozies on the schedule coming up. All right, look. I'll be back later in the week. I'll wrap this bad boy up. No time today to get into True Detectives discussion. I'll keep that on the message board. I did give you a little Roma love, though. Go watch Roma. Don't watch the Pro Bowl. Not if it's on your DVR. Just wipe that thing. Don't do that to yourself. Among other things you probably shouldn't do to yourself is that whole Texas men's basketball thing. It'll just hurt you. I'm just warning everybody on the back heels of the conversation that we just had. Let